Hello, I'm Rachel Williamson, and I would like to welcome you to the Running Great Stores podcast. With more than 25 years of success in retail, working for multi-billion dollar companies, I show brands how to deliver unparalleled customer experiences and run operationally excellent stores. But really, I just love retail. I love talking about it, teaching it, and helping everyone, from the CEO in the boardroom to the store manager on the sales floor, understand how to operate best-in-class stores. On this podcast, you'll hear from experts with a wide range of experience as we discuss everything retail and how you can start running great stores. To learn more, visit www.runninggreatstores.com. Welcome to the Running Great Stores podcast, season 4, episode 28, with your host, Rachel Williamson, and today's guest, Scott Kirby. Scott has spent his career building leadership teams focused on retail fundamentals, knowing that retail is a game of inches and not miles. He's the head of stores for Sephora Canada and lives by the principle that if you run a fleet like it's a one-store business, you will always win. I know you're going to love today's conversation, so settle in and listen to it till the end. And if you know someone who can benefit from it, I hope you'll share the Running Great Stores podcast with them. Hey, Scott, it's so good to see you.
Rachel, it is so great to be with you as well.
I mean, so you live in Canada almost all the time. I'm in the United States. COVID keeps the borders closed. How are we ever supposed to see each other? It's insane.
It's crazy. The last couple of years with the border and the COVID situation has been nuts, just getting in and out of the country.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I can't wait to get into that a little bit. But it's awesome that we're able to be together here in the New Albany Public Library, masks on and all, although we did get to take them off since we're in this private room, which is great. But I'm super excited for our audience to be able to hear about your retail journey. You know, that's how we know each other. We work together, what, Bath and Body Works, right?
Can you believe that we have known each other for 20 years? Oh. We were district managers together when we were kids. It feels like just yesterday.
It does, I know. And you know, some of the best memories, and I'm sure the infrastructure to my own career and my own beliefs around retail operations came from BBW.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it like boot camp, but in a good way?
We learned it at the same place at the same time, and I think our brains have always aligned on the retail fundamentals.
I know. I'm kind of excited to dive into those. You know, most of the people that listen to the Running Great Stores podcast are retailers like us. They've got it in their blood and they love it. And no matter how hard it gets, they're in it to win it. And so I'm excited for just our audience to be able to hear what your journey's been like and to take away some things, some learnings from you that will help them be even more successful in their retail careers. So I'm
just
super
so you
glad
know
I'm
it's
here.
Mutual, because I promise you I learn so much from you every time we're together.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, one of our favorite things we should just talk about now, Stubbs and Wooten. Anybody listening, if you don't know who Stubbs and Wooten is, please Google it. They're fantastic shoes, and Scott and I both love them. And we
everybody needs a pair of velvet slippers, velvet loafers.
Everybody. And as you can see, Scott, I wish our audience could see, I have on my Stubbs and Wooten. When my dog Oliver died, I had these custom made, and I love them, and they have Oliver's face on them. Aren't they so fun?
And you know, we both love Westies, because I had a Westie Spencer who died about 2 years ago, but he lived for like 18 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
The sturdiest dogs on the planet. And now I have us two Scotties, a new Scotty puppy, and a four-year-old Scotty, and they don't live as long, but they're just as fun as Westies, a little obnoxious. But
we have a little Italian Greyhound, Lulu, and she is just adorable, and it is so great having puppies again. They keep you active.
They do, and I love the name Lulu, and I know you guys dress her amazing. I mean, she may have better clothes than I do.
She's a nut.
I mean, is there a little monogramming going on? I'm not going to divulge too much here. Yeah. You and I may spend a little too much time over at the monogram lady at Easton.
I think a monogram makes everything better in life.
I agree. It's so funny. Do you remember the texting that we were doing? Like, you were in Canada, I'm here, we're in the middle of COVID, I'm buying Stubbs and Wooten shoes, I'm sending you pictures, and I'm asking you, what monogram should I be putting on this sweater?
right? My husband's like, who are you talking to? I'm like, listen, no
listen,
one gives advice like Scott Kirby.
It's
on.
All about the monogram.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's just jump in. So we talked a little bit how we met, but I'd love for you to just share for those of us that are listening that maybe don't know your background. Let's start with, was retail accidental or intentional career for you?
It was absolutely intentional.
Wow. So tell us about that.
My whole family was in retail. The funny thing is I really separate my retail career into kind of a couple chunks. The first chunk, I spent about 10 years at Macy's, or a West Coast department store, the Bon Marché, before it became Macy's. And my whole family worked at the Bon Marché together. And it was really an awesome experience in really learning the foundation of retail and kind of back of house retail operations. And then I moved into specialty retail, and I was with L Brands for about 20 years, which was an amazing experience. I was a district manager in a couple markets. I was a regional manager in four different markets. I did a little bit of strategy work in the home office. I spent some time in store operations. I was in the international business for a couple of years, helping franchise partners around the world translate the brand and bring it to life in their market. And then I ran BBW Canada for a couple of years as head of stores, which has then kind of kicked off my Canadian journey. And there's something interesting. Once you start in Canadian retail, it kind of gets in your blood. And I've now had three or four different assignments that have all tethered me back to Canada in one way or another.
Wow, that is super cool. So until you hit the international piece, we almost had tracked like the same
Absolutely.
Career, but in some of the same places and then some different places, which I guess I knew that, but to just hear you saying it, I'm like, oh my goodness, we have taken this journey. For me though, retail was accidental. I wanted to be a prosecuting, that's right. But you can use that in retail and actually be quite successful.
Absolutely.
Right? So, you know, that obviously, as we think about what our career, where our careers have taken us, we've experienced that. That critical thinking, like, I think people think about retail as the job they're going to have until the job they get that is going to be their career. Instead of realizing the amazing career that retail can be, but you can't just show up every day and sell whatever it is you're selling. Like, you got to really think about it as a career, and you've got to be super intentional about.
You have to love what you're doing.
You have to love it. That's right. When you get cut, you got to bleed retail, right?
People fall in love with retail. It gets in their blood, and then they never get out of it.
Yep. And that's what happened with us, right? But, you know, no regrets there. The funniest thing is, I don't know, for years I felt like I was saying to people, I guess I might have a little regret that I didn't do the law school thing, because I feel like my personality, my style would have been a good fit. Then a few years ago, I was working on a project. I was at Justice at the time as their VP of Store Operations, and I was working with the legal team on something, and I had this aha moment. I actually hate this. I love what I do, and the legal stuff that they're doing, no, I actually don't want it. And it was so cool to be able to like release that regret and realize that the things that we spend our life doing that we really love, those are the right things.
It was a good reckoning for you.
It was.
It's very similar though, the amount of people that get out of college and they go to school for one topic and then they do something completely different when they get out.
Yeah.
Sometimes an idea or a vision is very different than the reality.
Yeah, it's so true. And I found, you know, a well-played career, you can make pretty good money. So probably not making super different money than I would have been as a lawyer, for sure, more than as a prosecutor, because
Absolutely.
Those guys work so hard and that role isn't very well paid. But listen, we don't do this for the money, right? We do it for the love of it. But then, like, COVID happened. And the retail stories were, I mean, they literally would make me emotional. We would see brands that we loved who just were no more. Even my last corporate role, Justice, is no more. Thankfully, they're at Walmart now, and little girls are still able to buy that brand. But it was heartbreaking, you know, to see what really was happening with retail. How did COVID impact you as a retail leader?
So to start with, COVID has been a terrible situation. And, Navigating through it, I think, has been really tricky for all of us personally, professionally. But I would also say there was a lot of retail that was on the verge going into COVID, and COVID didn't do those businesses any favors. But coming out of COVID, it's almost like, the survival of the fittest, and the strongest retailers are growing and thriving coming out of COVID. For as terrible as the situation was. So, I think that as a retailer, we all learned a lot during the COVID period, whether it was taking care of our team, taking care of our customers and clients. But it has really forced us all to step up our game.
There's no doubt. I think you bring up a great point, and that's if you weren't executing well before COVID, and you at any given time, you could have gone down the bankruptcy path or just closed or whatever happened. To your point, COVID pushed you over the edge. I hope, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, I hope that retailers look deep inside themselves and say, wow, we're lucky, we're still here, but what do I need to do differently in order to ensure that we have the infrastructure to withstand the storms that really aren't predictable, like a COVID?
Let me take that in two parts. So the first piece of that is really about brands and brand building. So I think when you go into the mall today, there's really only a handful of terrific retailers that have terrific brands, terrific product positions, which will really propel them into the future. And then the flip side of that is, there's still a lot of brands out there today that made it through the storm that probably won't make it for the next couple of years, just because they don't have the product and really customer base to build upon for the future. And so I think that COVID has started something. It's a tipping point, if you will, for retailers that were not super fiscally strong or have great product that clients are really dying to see. The other part of that, though, is operational fundamentals were important before COVID. They're even more important now. You think about the challenges that everybody's having with hiring. And it's going to force all of us to run better businesses, run smarter businesses, and in many situations, run them with less people than we would have once had, just because the demand for talent is so tough right now that going into this holiday is going to be tricky for everyone in retail.
It is, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, and we're going to get into that in a minute on what you think is going to happen. Like, what is that really going to look like in stores? Because I think our audience listening is wondering about it as well. I think that every generation, every decade, has had a disruptor for retail. I actually was digging through some old content in my archives, and there's this whole thing we did on the war on talent.
Rachel, let's just unpack a little bit the war on talent and really what that means. Talent, demand for talent and great teams, has been going on as long as retail has existed. And as we're heading into holiday this year, I've had a terrific opportunity recently to spend time with my store team from really coast to coast in Canada. And I was surprised and pleased at the amount of leaders in my business that joined as seasonal hires over holiday and have grown up and had really terrific careers. And so as I think about, growing young leaders in the business, what I really look for when identifying talent is attitude and hard work over skill set. You can teach people how to run the business, but they have to come with the right ingredients to start with, which to me is really all about attitude.
I love that. And I love the idea of if you are out there and you think you might want to start working in retail, but you're worried you don't have experience, don't let that discourage you, right? That's what I hear you saying. If you've got a can-do attitude, if you're excited, if you're willing to put in what it takes to be successful, to help your brand be successful, then go for it. Go get a job somewhere. I think you should get a job at a brand that you love.
I
That
agree.
makes that's like half the battle right there. If you love the fashion or you love the style or whatever it is. I mean, frankly, I could work at Restoration Hardware. I wouldn't even have to go through training. Everything in my house is Restoration Hardware. I could tell you the collections. I could tell you by year because I've got all the old catalogs. That's love of a brand. Tory Burch is another one of my favorite brands. I would love to buy everything at Tory Burch. I think her look is amazing, but she's created something special. And whether you buy her line or you just appreciate the beauty of the collection and the fabrics and what have you, go apply for a job there. Like, if you love makeup, get a job at Sephora. If you love, you know, J. Crew clothing, get a job there. Enjoy the discount. But don't be worried that because you don't have a degree in fashion merchandising or because you haven't, you know, managed a store before, that maybe someone's not going to look at you as potential talent. And if someone doesn't, then that's not the right place for you, right? So
I agree. If you love the brand, it's half of it. And within every category, if you love furniture, RH is the place to be. You know, if you love hardware, Lowe's is the place to be.
that's
Like
right.
there's great brands within every category. And you know, in my business, we're hiring a lot of people for holiday, just like every other retailer is right now. And we love hiring people that love makeup, but you don't have to love makeup. If you love selling, if you love being with clients and customers, you know, we're the spot for you. And I think that there's the right place for everybody in retail somewhere. And sometimes we try to fit people into the wrong brands, where really there's a great retail spot for everybody.
Yeah, I love that. So as we think about holiday hiring this year, I mean, do you remember the math that used to be like you'd look at how many hours you were going to have on Black Friday, and you'd look at the hours of shifts that were available, and you'd divide it out, and you'd say, I need this many bodies, right? That's probably not going to be an option. I remember back in the day for Bath and Body Works, my high volume stores at Easton, you know, we'd hire 50, 75, 100 people for seasonal. You needed people who could do freight and, you know, all that high volume, high throughput business. I don't think you're finding that many people now. What are you envisioning it looking like? Is there job sharing going on where, you know, does one of the things I suggested recently in a post is I think the managers need to know all the other managers in their mall and say, all right, who's on your team that you can't give enough hours to? And I'll work around when you need them. And you know, how do you use relationships with those managers that you know in the mall to help kind of do a little bit of job sharing? I mean, do you think that that's even realistic?
Absolutely. So I think if you go back to your BBW example around Black Friday, like the math is still the starting place, right? You know that it's your biggest volume day of the year. And if you work backwards from the hours you're going to have, it's going to tell you the number of people you need to have. But in today's era, like we work in this gig economy, right? Where all of our young employees have three or four jobs. And so I think if you can match, you know, what their needs are. But there's even a new concept today around predictable scheduling. So really allowing people that you're hiring to say, hey, I can work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you know, but I need the rest of the week off because I'm going to school or I have another job. Where, you know, years ago, retailers really hired and scheduled based on their needs. And I think that's completely flipped today. You have to start with the needs of your team and what works for them, because the reality is they're going to have to work a couple of jobs just to make it work.
I think you're right. And I just as I think about my own consulting business, and the people that work for me, when they finish a project, like if somebody emailed me something last night she had done for me, I immediately Venmoed her the money. Like she got instant gratification. What do you think that does? When I ping her and say, do you have time to do this, this, and this for me? What do you think she says? She says,
Well, getting paid on time and having availability to cash is probably one of the most important things for young people. And so I promise you that you paying in a quick and efficient way, she'll be right back. She'll
yeah,
want to take out
every
more than you.
time I ask her, and she doesn't say, well, am I going to get paid right away? She just says yes, and
She
then
knows
she
she's
gets
going to get
paid
paid.
right away. And if it was a half hour, I automatically round up to the hour. Like, There are, and I know if you're a store manager listening, you don't have the luxury, right? But I think as if you and I talk about organizations and we think about the advice that we're giving organizations, we might have to think a little bit more creatively. Do we allow people to take a draw against their pay and get paid more? Do we go from every other week to every week? Do we pay people at the end of their shift? Like, do retailers need to get more creative around it? I actually just saw a demo of a new scheduling software system. It was the coolest thing. On the associate's mobile device, when it sends over a notification that there's an open shift available, it tells them how much money they'll make. And the psychology behind it is it better, is it harder for them to turn it down when they see the cash they're turning down? How brilliant is that?
Awesome.
I don't know any scheduling systems that are doing that, but is that something we should have our managers doing? Should we say when they go and say, I need someone to fill the shift on Saturday, it's 5 hours, you know, that's going to equate to $75 for you or whatever their hourly rate is, might get someone quicker to say yes. So I thought that was really interesting. And I'm grateful for vendors who are helping retailers think differently about how they, you know, how they have to engage their workforce.
I think it's really relevant, Rachel. When you think about, you know, retailers that are working seasonal jobs, they're also probably waiting tables, working at a coffee shop, bartenders, where they're getting cash every day. You know, tip money is important to them. And so the frequency of paying people is really important. And even for retail leadership, as I think about store managers, district managers, you know, having these really long drawn out bonus periods doesn't really apply anymore. Mm-hmm. The more often that you can slide cash to your team, the more engaged they're going to be.
Yeah, I think so. It's almost back in the day, we would call golden handcuffs, where you'd hold out until the IC payout, right? And so everyone would, you know, be like, all right, I've just got to make it through the next IC payout. And then I might look for something else where I don't have to work as many hours or whatever it is. And you never did. You just kept staying because you get addicted to the payouts. But those were 6 months long. And now I know for me, I advise retailers, if your bonus structure is longer than 30 days, it's too long. None of us have that attention span anymore. And you're just willing to walk away from the money.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah, it's super interesting. So shifting gears a little bit, I'm just curious, you use this word operational fundamentals, which honestly, music to my ears as someone who's been in store ops for so many years. I'd love for you to share your belief around winning at retail. What are those fundamentals? We can say three things, five things, whatever you want to do, but share those fundamentals. I think you and I might think everybody knows those and everybody's doing them. But I think what we've both realized, and we were having some conversation in the green room before we started today, I think what we both realize is there are a lot of retailers who still don't quite have the fundamentals nailed. So would you mind kind of just sharing your perspective on what those fundamentals are?
Absolutely. So Rachel, when you and I were kids in the business, you know, we grew up with a retail playbook that focused on best practices from winning retail leaders. And the playbook that we lived by, you know, was always grounded in have the best talent first, right? That was scheduled appropriately to align with when your clients or customers were going to be in the business. So if you started with right people in the business at the right time, you could then drive the best conversion in the business. And I still think that that's the winning formula. You know, conversion is nothing more than footsteps coming in and bags going out. But really, it's hard to put the ingredients together on a consistent basis in a lot of stores. So really thinking about, you know, driving great productivity through a few retail fundamentals, I think that it all starts with people, scheduled right time, driving great conversion. And then outside of that, every brand is going to have, you know, different pieces of the business that are important to them. But I think we all start from kind of a common place, whether you're running Gap stores, you know, Target stores, or Bath and Body Works stores. It's really all the same fundamentals, that doing it really makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I remember the Lobos playbook, right? Limited brands, operating system. Lobos. And then when I went to Justice, it was called Josie, which was the Justice operating system, but we had this cute little caricature girl and her name was Josie. But the really the best brands out there have an infrastructure that they are tethered to that you really don't move off that, right? You may be really creative around your marketing, around your promotions, around your offerings, around your assortment, but you don't move off the fundamentals, right people, right place, right time is a great example. One of the things that I love to really think about when I think about fundamentals is the floor supervisor and the role that they play as they move through the location to say, do I not just have the right people here, but do I have them zoned in the right place? Do I need to give them a little feedback, what have you? Talk to us a little bit about the role you think the floor supervisor plays in a retailer's success.
Rachel, as I think about floor leadership as it relates to my business, it's probably the most critical role in the store. And going back to our discussion on conversion and everything revolving around traffic coming in and bags going out, having the right floor leadership is absolutely critical. And the amount of retailers that don't really have a program to drive great selling leadership, if you will, really surprises me. And then building some reporting and tools around it that help optimize and identify who those great leaders are that really move the business and how to take everybody in the store along with them. I just think it's a critical part of leading retail today.
I love that. And I think we're right on the same page around floor supervisors. You know, it's funny, you can walk into a store, and when there's good floor supervision going on, you immediately recognize that manager on duty. You can feel the energy. You know, I hope retailers that are listening today, if they take one thing away, they take away, that's something I own. That's something that I really have control over. I may not have control over some of the other things happening. You may be low on inventory. You may, you may not have everything that you want or you need or think you should have in order to achieve your sales results, but you can create a remarkable experience in your four walls. And it starts with having really great floor supervisors. And it doesn't have to be the store manager all the time. I love when store managers help their assistants and their sales leads or their key holders learn what good floor supervision looks like and oversee it and coach them in the moment. And I love seeing that. And I'm sure you feel that same way, right?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, it's a great opportunity to grow junior leaders in a business by really partnering them up with somebody who's a great floor leader or a store manager who's running a Saturday 2-4 segment, you know, and really using it as an opportunity to teach somebody else how to run a peak traffic hour.
Yeah, we're not born with it, right? It's something we learn. And someone taught us. Someone took us along under their wing and taught us how to do it well. For me, I learned how to do it at the Gap. Way back in the 80s, and I'm sure you can pinpoint those leaders that took you under their wing and helped you. They saw your potential and said, all right, I'm going to invest in Scott because I know that it's going to be worth it for him, it's going to be worth it for me, and it's going to help our store be successful. So I
like your point about it being a learned behavior, though. It's almost like if you took on a new sport, and I don't play basketball, but if I went to a gym today and started playing basketball, you would have to shoot a ton of baskets to become good at it. And running a sales floor during peak hours is exactly the same. You have to start, you have to do it over and over, kind of like Malcolm Gladwell's Outlier book. You have to do the same thing for 10,000 hours to get good at it. I think being a great sales leader in a retail store is exactly the same.
I love that you brought up Malcolm Gladwell. I think I've read all of his books. He's one of my favorites. And even if you just take nuggets away, right, from each of those. And, you know, so I'd love to talk to you about who inspires you. You inspire me. I mean, I have taken notes here that I'm going to go back and apply to, you know, just my own war chest of tips and advice and feedback and things that I can be thinking about as I build out the Running Great Stores playbook for clients. But who's inspiring you? Like, where are you getting your bucket filled, so to speak, as you think about your role as a senior leader in an organization and you lead those around you? But, you know, we got to get that bucket filled up too. So tell us about that.
Rachel, I feel really fortunate to have had the opportunity to work for some terrific people in my career, some really solid leaders. I'll tell you, though, I've also worked for some really terrible leaders that I've learned a lot that I wouldn't want to repeat as well. But as I think about the world today, you know, we're in an interesting place. Colin Powell passed away this week from COVID. And, you know, he was an amazing leader in our country, had a point of view, whether you believed in his vision or not, that's beside the point. But he showed up when he needed to show up. And you think about other great leaders, whether it was President Obama that had the cheeky title of No Drama Obama, right? Like, he was solid as a rock. As I think about great retailers, though, Mickey Drexler had a vision. He had passion and fire for the business that he created at The Gap. He brought to J.Crew, and he's even bringing today to his son's startup direct-to-consumer company, you know, which I think is awesome. One of my favorite leaders, though, in retail is Marvin Ellison at Lowe's. I followed him a lot when he attempted to right-size JCPenney, and the leadership and vision that he brought to that business obviously was needed for many years before he got there. And he did some really good stuff prior to moving on to Lowe's. And I think, you know, if you just follow his career, he really gets how to touch it and feel it and bring magic to life in stores. The amount of retail leaders that I have seen transition from specialty store and really follow him into the Lowe's business, I think has been really impressive. But there's so many great examples out there of terrific leaders in retail that I think have influenced so many generations of young people. And, you know, as I think about my own leadership and what I've brought to the business, you know, I'm really proud of the people that I've had the opportunity to work with, and really the amount of young leaders that are going to go on and have much bigger careers than I've ever had, and really just to see them thrive and succeed really makes me proud of my time in the business.
I love that. And I love those examples that you gave. And it was less about where you politically aligned with any of these peoples and more about what you learned from them as leaders. And I think that's an interesting segue into this final piece of the podcast. We talked a little bit already about the challenges that are going to face all retailers this holiday from a staffing standpoint. And when we talked about some potential things that retailers can do to circumvent that, what other challenges are you seeing that retailers are going to face this holiday? And then where I want to take that is some of those things we've got control over and some of those things we don't. So we tie it back to good leadership. So that's where we're kind of heading with this, right? So share just a little bit of your thoughts.
The importance of good leaders showing up is going to be even more critical this holiday probably than ever. So of course, there's going to be labor challenges and really hiring challenges. But outside of that, there's a whole lot of other things going on in the world that are going to affect or impact retail stores. You know, whether it's supplies, getting bags into stores is kind of a basic tool that you need to drive your business. It's going to be complicated this year. You know, and outside of that, everybody's going to have inventory challenges. I think we've all been watching the news and seeing what's going on in the ports around the world and some of the shipping delays. It's going to be a tricky season for retailers. And I think that, you know, having a steady leader in a store or in a business is going to be critical in helping navigate through some of the gravity of the season that we will have no control over.
Yeah, I love the idea of managers leaning into what they stand for, what they own, what they can control, and to be a cheerleader of their team to make the experience a really positive one and not to just complain about all the things that are going wrong. And it's so easy, right, to think about, look around and be like, I don't have as much inventory as I want. I can't make my sales plan, or the packaging situation. They're walking out of here with a brown paper bag. Like, that's not our brand or what have you. But I would challenge everyone listening, just for all of us, set aside the things that you have no control over and make a list of those things that you absolutely have control over and get after that. My guess would be it may very well be the best holiday season that you've ever led in retail if you do that. So that I think is where my head goes.
And I think, you know, as we're kind of wrapping up, I would bring this full circle back to the work that you're doing with your clients, though, and the importance of having a retail playbook and really defining the fundamentals that move a particular retail organization. It's critical and it's going to be more critical this holiday than ever.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We were talking earlier, and one of my favorite things is really implementing a playbook for retail clients. Because the light bulb, you just see the light bulbs going off, you know, just all over the place. Like, how did I not think of this? I had a client say to me yesterday, I'm embarrassed that I didn't realize this. And I'm like, don't be, that's why I'm here. So thank you for that. And so I'd love to just kind of wrap up. Is there one last piece of advice you would give managers today in retail, whether it's about holiday or just about navigating retail, or just any bit of a brilliance from you, Scott?
I think brilliance might be a stretch, but I think if I had one thought, it's really about tenacity and you know, head down, lean into the season. Those that work really, really hard are going to figure it out and will not only get through it, but thrive. You know, there's lots of business ahead of us this year and those that do a really good job, both for their internal client and their external, I think we'll have a really good holiday season.
Well, from your lips to God's ears on that holiday, good holiday season part, I do think it's going to be great. And I'm excited. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's always obviously good for us to get together and to be able to catch up, but for you to just share bits of wisdom from your experience and what you're seeing with our audience. I appreciate the generosity of your time and
great spending time with you.
It was so good. Thanks, Scott. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the Running Great Stores podcast. If you love retail and enjoy these conversations, share them with a friend. And please be sure to head over to the iTunes store to leave a review. This helps other retail lovers discover the show. If you have any questions or comments about Running Great Stores or would like to be a guest, visit runninggreatstores.com or email me at rachel@runninggreatstores.com.